perfect the way we're going, because we're going to also hear from our other nature champion, Dr. Sarah Stander, and then hopefully we'll have some time at the end to have a dialogue. Dr. Stander is at the Louisiana State University. She's an associate professor of pediatrics. She's also the director of diabetes and healthy lifestyle program. And with that, I'll just turn it over to Dr. Stander.
Thank you all so much for being here. It's a real privilege for me, and I thank Layla for putting this together for us. I don't have a whole lot of time and have a lot to share. Usually a session like this, I'm preaching to the choir because the people who are here already realize the message and they're probably already living it. If you'd like to interrupt me at any point, please do so, because I like dialogue so much better than a lecture. So these are my disclosures, no relevant commercial ones, but I was fortunate to receive the training to be a nature champion, and I'm indebted to Layla for all of her help and encouragement and inspiration, and to Nigel for being there as the park ranger to teach us on that day. Also, I will be describing one prescription. I will be speaking of a drug that is not FDA approved, but it is APHA approved, and that is vitamin N. And this was this term was first coined by Dr. Richard Love, who wrote a book, a wonderful book, Last Child in the Woods. I would highly recommend it to you if you have not read it. He was the American Academy of Pediatrics keynote speaker several years ago. He wrote this book about the same time that it was noted that national parks were not being visited by our families. There was an enormous decline in the use of these beautiful parks that we have available, and so that, coupled with the fact that we were noting that children were spending much more time in structured activities and were developing disorders known as media addiction disorders, we realized that we really needed to do something about this. So here's a picture that kind of gives you the just a pictorial, an infogram, if you will, of what's going on. The upper right corner, we can imagine that this child is looking at a TV. In the left, I don't know how the little girl is seeing her screen, because it's very bright out there. And then you see some children who are not interacting with each other, but they're playing with their media. And then on the far left are some baby boomers. Actually, that's my brother and me in our home in Charleston at the beach. And I will tell you that the children born between 1946 and 1964, of which I am, may be the last generation really to know nature in a more natural way. That's why for me, who started out as a general pediatrician, then became a subboard in adolescent medicine and very, very trained in diabetes, ended up being very interested in the fact that the Academy of Pediatrics in 2007 developed its own policy statement. This was developed by Dr. Ken Ginsberg, and it was basically that children need to play. I was horrified that we had to have a statement to that effect. I co-authored an anti-obesity toolkit that I did not put in a PubMedable place because I wanted all healthcare providers to have access to it. And if you're interested in this, you can read about it in the 2005 November edition of Diabetes Spectrum. That's where it is. And I have three abstracts on an anti-obesity toolkit that Dr. George Bergen, the University of Tennessee, and I actually co-wrote. In that toolkit, I will tell you that we have tracked in bubble form how much media time is being used, how much screen time, but also, is your child getting unstructured time? We did not put in nature. I didn't think I needed to put that, unstructured play time, and that's the key important part in building resilience in children. I'll also refer you to not only my toolkit, but Dr. Ken Ginsberg's book, Giving Our Children Roots and Wings, How to Build Resilience in Our Pediatric Population. It's a fabulous book, and it absolutely ties in with building resilience in the parks. I am big on diabetes and camping. My passion when I first went into medicine was type 1 diabetes. I'm very interested in autoimmune disease, and I'll allude to that in just a minute. But I've worked in diabetes camps for years and years and years, and I can tell you the joy of these children in nature, children who are miserable and poorly controlled in the urban setting, has just been miraculous. And to be there with the children that I've treated has been one of the greatest joys of my entire career. So I want to talk about the benefit, but I don't need to, hear violence, ADHD, depression, emotional eating, and screen time addiction. We've already covered that. And we know that the personal reports of patients, not so much evidence, but just their true experience of their quality of life, not just that measurable by health-related quality of life screens, or even those adjusted for chronic illness, just the joy of people being in nature has been so amazing. So I'd like to talk a little bit about intangible effects and indulge you in that, because you're in a meeting that's very devoted to evidence, as am I as an academic doctor and as a practicing pediatrician. Though these aspects of being in nature are more difficult to prove statistically in the format of evidence, they may be the most profound, positive, intangible effects that underlie measurable outcomes. So that's the thought I'd like to leave you with as we go along. Busy slide, but basically how do children spend their time? Not the way that I spent my time as a child. Before I gave a talk at the National Society for Adolescent Health and Medicine meeting in March, it was an hour-long session on what NEEF has given to me and how I've expanded it into my own sharing of the message. I saw this in The New Yorker. The cartoon was copywritten, but I put these pictures in there. It said, the woman was talking to another woman. She said, "We love Tuscany. The cell reception was fantastic, and the Wi-Fi to die for." I'm not against media. I have an iPad. I have an iPhone. I have 3 Mac computers. I mean, I'm very connected to it. But I just want to say that we're trying to hybridize this. One of my adolescent medicine colleagues, Dr. Michael Rich, who's at Harvard, and he's fabulous if you ever get to hear him speak or talk with him, has a website, CMCH, Children's Media, Children's Hospital.tv. It's from Children's Hospital, Boston. And he has been actively studying the effect of media on children, the good and the bad. And so I just added Agricola Poeta Est, the farmers are poets. And then I was doing a grant last year on the microbiome, and so I saw this picture that Mike had put on his Facebook page with the dirt on Earth Day. And so I named that Gut Dirt. And then I decided to put in there Mycobacterium vaccae. It's a natural soil bacterium that people inhale or ingest while in nature. And the thrust of this article was, can bacteria make you smarter? We do need to let our children play in the dirt. Yes, we do. So this is a patient of mine in my diabetes clinic. Now, this is a child who comes from a very, very functional family. And I will tell you that this little girl, though she's playing on her iPad, if she's waiting for a visit with me, had just pointed out to me as I walked in the room that did I know there was a spider weaving a web on the window outside the exam room. I have requested that all my exam rooms be put, if possible, in the areas where we have windows looking out. That has been so healing for my patients, just as they wait to see me, and sometimes the waits are a little longer than I like because we try to cover everything we can in chronic disease care. Now, my next picture is one that was drawn by a child who's one of 9 children from a terribly impoverished background. She lives in a very small town in the bayou, and as she was waiting for an appointment with me, she was not on an iPad, she doesn't have one, but she finished this picture, and she gave it to me. She said, "Dr. Stender, last night I knew I was coming to see you, and I wanted to make you a picture." She's been drawing her whole life, and she now has a scholarship to be in one of the art schools in Louisiana. I have this framed in my office. So I have some educational objectives. Being an educator, I always have those. So I want to give you a little history. I want to reintroduce the concept of nature deficit disorder. And I want to show a little bit of the evidence-based studies, but we're not going to have time if we're going to have a dialogue. So I'm going to zip through the talk, and if you want to go back to something, say, "Hey, wait a minute, I want to go back. Let's talk about that." So basically, the name of my talk came from Hippocrates, who was the first prescriber of nature. He was, of course, Greek. He was born on the island of Kos, we believe, in Greece. And he, in the translation in Greece into the Greek, which I don't know, but I do know Latin, says, "Nature is the doctor." So we don't even need that tertium quid, that third thing, that prescription, which is important, and I use them. Nature itself is the doctor, the healer. Now, this was also relative to the interior milieu. the interior environment of homeostasis, and I don't have time to go into this evolution of thought in medicine. However, it was not just the interior environment and the homeostatic healing of body from within, but it was also without. And Hippocrates was the first one who's noted to have prescribed hydrotherapy and visits to nature and to healing waters. Don't have time to go through the whole history, but this pretty much goes through our father of medicine on in through the father of modern physiology. So, there is the book, 2005, Richard Lewis, Last Child in the Woods. And basically what he was saying, that human beings, especially children, are spending less time outdoors. And this is resulting in a large range of behavioral problems. These are not described in either ICD-10 or in DSM-5. And so evidence was compiled and reviewed in 2009. And basically, this is the philosophy behind the nature principle, that it's rhetorical, it's anecdotal, it's empirical, it's harder to quantify. It explores the impact of nature on physical, psychological, and spiritual health, as well as bonds of family, friendship, and communities. And the Institute of Medicine has a great handout that I got at the exhibit yesterday talking about linking neighborhoods and communities to parks. And that's what I've done, patient by patient, trying to see where is the closest park to you. Do you have transportation? Recommending our fabulous park services, but also saying, what's close to you? What's sustainable in your life? What will be the first step in getting your whole family out? One of my earliest abstracts in my academic career looked basically at the demographics of families who were experiencing the horrible epidemic of obesity that we're experiencing now. And what I found was that most of my children were latchkey children. They came from dual income working parents. And I'm stepping on this too much. Excuse me, I've leaned on that. But anyway, they had no way to get out of their houses, and they had fast food and packaged food in their pantries and in the refrigerators, and they had nothing else to do but to sit and watch TV or be on the computer or eat. Some of my patients have so little energy that they come home and they eat and they go to sleep. And I tell them, is this how you want to live, like an old person? And if I were in geriatric medicine, which I'm not, I'm a pediatrician and adolescent medicine doc, I would continue to share this message of moving, of Michelle Obama's message, let's move. Those who do not move will die. So anyway, sorry I'm not real good with this PowerPoint. Let me get there. So there's the policy statement, just referring to Ken Ginsberg, the nature of philosophy. And this is my next-door neighbor here in New Orleans. And it was Martin Luther King who said that the success of any social movement depends on its ability to depict a world where children will want to go. Thinking about children's need for nature helps us begin to paint a picture of that world, which must be done because the price of not painting that picture is far, far too high. No one among us wants to be a member of the last generation to pass on to their children the joy of playing outside in nature. This is a direct quote from Richard Louv, and this is one of the wonderful park benches that Nigel was telling us about. This is Bayou Coquille, and if I have time at the end, I'm going to let you take a quick tour through Bayou Coquille. If you could tell, I've tried to recapitulate our nature day, which is about 6 hours, our training here with Neef, and we took a little walk after the talk. Didn't have time to go out to the bayou, but following that, once the spring came, one of my children and I actually went out and had a beautiful day there, which is when I took this picture. So that's what we don't want to happen, for this all to disappear. Now, the question, what would our lives be like if our days and nights were as immersed in nature as they are in technology? How can we hybridize our world? Well, Neef has thought of this already. They have an app that you can, a whole handout on apps that the children can put into their phones or adults, and they can categorize objects and you know, what they see in nature, plants and animals, flora and fauna. How can each of us create that life-enhancing world, not only in a hypothetical future, but right now for our families and for ourselves? And these are just some ticklers for your brain. How many patients use electronics during office visits? How many have their own children using electronics during the family dinner meal? I actually had that with my teenagers until I told them, they're now in their early 20s, I told them, no food if you bring that to the table, and no, you're not taking your meal in front of the TV. So that was, children, I don't know how many in here do that, but I have many patients who do. How many actually have a family dinner table? And this is something else I've talked about in lectures, is the importance of the family dinner table, and research has been done. Dr. Diane Newmark-Zaynor has done a great deal of evidence showing that eating disorders and obesity and adolescent risk factors are decreased by simple fact of having a family dinner table. How many hours of computer time do each of you do as well, and how much time do you have to be in nature? So the background from Louvin, and I'm going to do this very quickly, run through it. There's a history of three frontiers, and he talks about the eighth intelligence, and I'm going to focus on those two things. It's the Lewis and Clark expedition, Teddy Roosevelt and the Rough Riders, and Davy Crockett. And now we're talking about denatured children. I've already talked about how baby boomers may be the last generation to have an intimate and familial relationship to land and water. I'm having trouble moving it. I'm stuck.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. I'm frozen.
What should we do, I wonder?
Well, I'll try to keep on talking a little bit. The eighth intelligence is basically the naturalist intelligence. It's not lingual, it's not spatial. Oh, yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Is the mic on too? No, the mic is here. Anyway, it's not lingual, spatial, or any of the other categories of intelligence, but it's basically the naturalist, the one that would be epitomized by John Moore and Rachel Carson and Darwin. And it's the child who, or the adult, who categorizes things, who notices subtle differences in things, who is the one who's, I really need my slides. Do you think, Will, do you think I'm disconnected from, so anyway, I had a picture of a, I don't know what to do. All right. It's frozen totally.
We have less time.
Okay. Well, anyway, I had a picture of an alligator with a baby alligator riding on the top face, and it said, "This is the." It said, "That one. That's the one who said I was a gecko," and this will be the child who will notice, or the adult who will notice the things in nature. So basically, what I wanted to show you was my little tour through Bayou Cotilla. I had pictures of what we had actually been given. There's an infographic. I wish I'd brought handouts. I almost did. But there's an infographic that Neef has, and I have a lot of references at the end of my talk to books that are really very wonderful. Richard Love has written two books. I think he's now written a third, but the other one was his response to nature deficit disorder, which is the nature prescription and how to give the antidote to the poison of not being in nature. So that's basically my message. We're trying to do it bird by bird, so to speak. I teach residents and medical students, and each one who comes to my clinics, I give this to. I've given grand rounds at LSU Pediatrics. Last year I did it, and in March of this year, I led the Spirituality Special Interest Group for the Society of Adolescent Medicine, and we had a very vibrant, wonderful dialogue about this with the Society of Adolescent Health and Medicine.
Okay, are there any questions for any of the speakers? I saw you first, please, yes.
Nigel, some of us don't live near national parks, but like I live near state parks. Is there any discussion going on between the federal government and state parks, or if, you know, if there's none in my state, can I encourage them to contact someone in the federal government?
The answer is yes. Excellent question. Can you hear me? Question like this?
Yes.
So as we're getting ready for the 100th anniversary of the National Park Service, the 2016 will be our centennial year, the state parks as a group are looking at celebrating with us and having
Where was the other question? Yes, please.
First, excellent presentation. I worked for the New York State Health Department, and we recently partnered with the state parks to offer Tai Chi classes for older New Yorkers to prevent falls. So, excellent presentation. But I live in upstate New York, and one concern is the rise in tick-borne illness, specifically Lyme disease and babesia. And I was wondering if your program has any component of education, or is that even an issue of preventing those illnesses? It's great to get children outdoors, but they get
Well, I'll try to address that quickly. The way NEEF does it is we do bring these up as issues, but then leave it to our nature champions, physicians who are trained to deal with the specific diseases. Yes?
Lyme disease is rare down here, but we do have some less severe tick-borne illnesses.
I've actually done residency. I'm from the Carolinas and did residency along the I-84 corridor, and there's a good bit of tick disease there. And I used to tell parents, not in general practice, not there anymore, but I used to tell them to get the tick off as soon as possible, to inspect their children from head to toe when they get out of bed, not to be afraid of it, but just to be sure you take the proper tweezers and go down deep and pull it out. They've done a lot of counsel with that, and I've treated my fair share of tick-borne disease, so very serious. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, we have other challenges here. We don't have the ticks as much, but we have alligators. We don't want people. People don't know, and they think it's like going to the zoo, and they're looking for, oh, honey, get up close to the alligator. They want to take a picture, and so we have to do a lot of education to have people realize it's not the zoo. It is a wild area. There are differences between moccasins and copperheads, and how you want to approach them, how you want to get in their space. So things like that we have to work with our population here, just to give them a sense of what they're going to encounter and then how they can be safe.
Yeah. Any other questions? Yes, please.
These visits were for several hours, it sounded like, and I just wondered, are the kids, was this during school time and so forth? Or,
they were all on Saturdays.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes, please.
Question.
Excellent question. Yeah, so that's where we are.
That's our challenge.
That's where we are. So there are a couple of options that we have. One is that because some of these doctors are kind of renegades, right? So we didn't officially work with Tulane, the institution. We worked with these doctors who really wanted to advocate for this. So one approach would be for us to talk about this. Going to Tulane Medical Institution, they have a shuttle bus that takes you from the uptown campus, downtown campus, and around. So perhaps we can work with them on getting on a schedule where we can do a small reimbursement for some of those activities, because they already have a transportation mechanism within the university. We don't have that at the Park Service. So there could be an option for us to do it that way. We're gonna look and see what we can do. When it comes to getting out to Chalmette, there's a boat that we can use to get out there, and we have a contract with that boat, so it's easy for us to get our kids on the boat. So there's some things that we know are existing already as transportation sources. We just have to figure out ways to connect with them and make those more institutionalized. Because this is more a pilot program, just to see if it could work. And we see that it can, so now we've got to see how we can now, as you say, sustain it. But I think we're going to do so using existing transportation mechanisms that are already there that we just haven't tapped into.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
I'm sorry.
How did you offer this up to the parents? I mean, you did it
things to come, because we thought there was a lot of benefit in having it be a family activity.
So it wasn't just a drop-off. So there was, in this last one, we just did over the weekend, one mother dropped off her kids, she dropped it off with her sister, and the sister was a chaperone for those kids. So, yeah, there has to be a chaperone. Yeah.
A question over there?
Hi, I'm curious about leveraging what you discussed. I don't know if it was the last generation that had connection to nature, or if there's another way to describe that. But with a lot of baby boomers retiring, and maybe being in a position where they could actually be the chaperones and accompany children, I wonder if there's some way to maybe systematically educating that demographic to, and about the science. I mean, they obviously get the intuitive benefit from growing up with it, but maybe understanding how critical it is, they could be more empowered to work with the, you know, grandkids and other young children in their lives and have dual benefits. I'm just curious if
great idea. Actually, a friend of mine did that. She called it summer camp for her, or the week of camp with her own grandchildren. She called her sons and she said, talk to your wife. And the grandchildren had all these activities and they were all outdoors, and took them, this was in Charleston, which is where I'm from, but took them to Estill Island, took them to the beach, took them to and various historic places, which is the park. And it was wonderful. The kids still talk about it. Versus the family that, you know, comes from a hunting tradition and a very still that tradition of people in the land. We're not that urban, but and we are, but we're not, if that makes sense. But yes, I think that we baby boomers are 10 years till I get to retire, but some of my older friends are already doing that. And but it's alarming if it's not integrated into the life of the child. Early in my practice, which was in the mid-80s when I first started, I remember telling parents, do you know you have a wild animal, a dangerous thing in your family room, and the mother would look at it and say, it's the TV that's stealing your children's lives. And then as the children get older, I would say, do you want to tell your children when you grow up about all the TV shows you saw, or do you want to tell them what you did and saw and actually experienced? And so I didn't realize it, but somehow suddenly I was realizing what was going on, this evolution. But it hadn't quite clicked, and that's why I think NEAT and the Park Service are coming, you know, stepping up to the plate saying, look, we've got to create programs, we've got to re-educate people. And then we've got the challenge, media is attractive, it's addicting, I've been addicted to it. I mean, I am addicted to it. I wake up in the morning, I've got to get to my email, and people expect us to do that, mm-hmm. right? If we don't, what's wrong with you? You didn't respond in 10 seconds to my text. And it's very, I remember Christmas 2 years ago, I didn't look at any text messages for 3 days, and I got a phone call, so are you alive? What's going on? And, I mean, that's crazy that people have created this expectation for each other. And so we've got to settle it down. That's a great idea.
I would add to that. They're trying to get more internal medicine. There's a lot of that population. So we can get grandparents, bring their grandkids. Often our parents are working on weekends, and that makes a big challenge. So my follow-up question is if they have grandparents and like, bring your child to the same place. But again, we're targeting way more just to get, and I think Andrew would probably be a target.
In reference to that aging gracefully, what types of programs are available?
I just want to say, for those of you who may be interested in delving more, you know, all these studies and others, it's part of the PowerPoint that is available on NEEF's website. There is also an archive webinar that kind of replicates the training that we did here in New Orleans. So there are, and then there are all these tools. I have a sample of each one of them. Like this is, for example, the infographic, both English and Spanish, and this can be printed as posters, which we provided to our nature champions. So no need to reinvent the wheel, and that's the purpose of this session. Here is an intervention that has worked in at least New Orleans, we know, due to the dedication of these wonderful leaders. And so take it, use it, bring it to your community, and I'll leave it at that. But of course, we are all available for additional questions through email, or if you want to talk to us further once the session is closes. So thank you so very much. I mean, if you want to stay and talk, yeah. It has been a great audience.